I've been around the world. I met my Mr. Wonderful, led him to Jesus. Heard that verse, follow me and I'll make you fishers of men. I was an old maid and overweight. The only way I could do it is believe God. I said, okay, I'll fish for him twice. First, I told him how to meet Jesus. Then I told him if you didn't marry the person that leads you to Jesus, you lose your salvation. So, amen.
Oh my, I'm not sure about the theology there, but as you can tell, the audience loved that joke from our guest on the last Focus on the Family. She was talking about meeting her future husband, and today we'll hear his unique story. I'm John Fuller, and your host is author and psychologist Dr. James Dobson. I really hope you'll stay tuned for this fascinating story of God's redeeming work in the life of one aimless soul.
Well, John, we heard a very, very special message last time.
We did.
Iris Blue, a special lady, shared her personal experience with us by way of recording. And I do hope that if our listeners were not tuned in yesterday, that they will write for a tape, because this is one that they're going to want to hear and want to have in their library. Iris was raised in a Christian home, but she became very, very rebellious. John, have you noticed that when young people or people of any age decide to turn away from common sense and what they know to be the values that they were taught or the Judeo-Christian value system, that within months their lives have come apart? I mean, it absolutely destroys you. You can see a 16-year-old suddenly say, who needs you, and make that left turn, and just very, very shortly they have sexually transmitted diseases. They've conceived babies. They're in trouble with the law. All kinds of difficulties occur, and that's what took place with Iris Blue. Her rebellion led to a life of drugs. She spent a number of years in prison. She was into the bar scene. In fact, she operated three different nightclubs. She was involved in pornography. Her life was a wreck, but someone took the time to share a message of hope with her and let her know that she was valuable to God and that he loved her. And Iris had never felt loved in her entire life. And there's so many other people that are in that situation today. They don't think anybody cares, and they have no value and no worth. But for Iris, her life soon turned around when she met the Lord face to face. And then it was just a little while later that she met her future husband.
And his name is Dwayne Blue, and all we know about him from our last broadcast is that Iris was very, very persuasive in leading him to Christ, and then also very, very relentless in trying to get Dwayne to marry her. And we're going to hear a little bit more about that today.
We are. As we said, we heard Iris' message yesterday, and today we're going to hear Dwayne's story. And this is kind of rare for us to do a husband and wife team like this, but I think our listeners are really going to enjoy it. Dwayne's past was just as destructive as was Iris's. And now they travel together as volunteer missionaries for the North American Board of the Southern Baptist Convention, telling their story to about anyone who will listen to them. And God is using them in a good work. And with that, we'll step aside and get started with Dwayne's story. And you know what, John, one of our purposes here at Focus on the Family is to give exposure to good messages like this. I hope the Lord uses this presentation on these 2 days to expand Iris and Dwayne's ministry as they try to spread the gospel of Jesus Christ. Let's get on with it.
This was recorded at a pastor's conference in Indiana.
Well, I'm going to ask you all to kind of do me a favor and try not to talk so much, because I already got sweaty hands and I don't do too good with a bunch of preachers. I'd rather be out talking to a bunch of street people anytime. They're a lot easier to talk to than you. I met Iris 12 years ago. The way I met Iris, I was working on a job site in Houston, Texas. I had a beard about down to the middle of my waist. I had hair past my waist. I lived in a 1952 International school bus with two big German Shepherd dogs that were my life. And dogs went everywhere I went. They went to work with me, went to beer joints with me at night. I drove a three-wheel motorcycle with a Volkswagen van engine in the back and a Triumph motorcycle on the front, and three seats, a big saddle seat up front for me and two Ford van seats over the wheels in the back. When I said load up, them dogs got on them back seats. And when I went to work, I got to work and I said stay, and they sat there. And I had a man working for me that was a college graduate, Texas A&M, engineer's degree. Even worked for NASA years before that. Has his name on patents of solar equipment that he designed, and some of his equipment's on the moon, still working right now. And in the 80s, he couldn't even get a job as an engineer, and he was working as a painter's helper, and he had to do what I told him to do. I loved it. And that man walked up to me 2 weeks before Christmas, almost 13 years ago now, and this is what he said to me. He said, "Blue, I'd like you to come home with me for the Christmas holidays. You need to meet my sister. She used to be a liar and a thief just like you." I wanted to punch that boy right in the mouth. But more than I wanted to punch him in the mouth. See, Christmas had a special meaning for me, folks. Real special. And it wasn't Jesus. And it wasn't trees and lights and gifts. Christmas meant one thing to me. Everybody went home. I didn't go home. Years before that, I was born in Denver, Colorado. Lived there 2 years. My real father left my mother. She moved to Kalamazoo, Michigan. I grew up there. Rode motorcycles there. Quit school there. Got on drugs there. Lied and stole and abused my mother. Oh, I never hit her. But I called her filthy names knowing she'd cry and go to her bedroom and I could do what I wanted. I stole from her. I broke in her house because I knew at 3 o'clock in the afternoon she'd be sorting mail at the post office. She didn't come home till 11 at night. And me and my buddies could park our motorcycles out in front of her house and kick in the door and do anything we wanted. And when I was 21 years of age, I just kicked in that door one afternoon and made me a sandwich, turned on the stereo, and called my buddies and said, "Line them up, boys. We're going to party till 11 o'clock. We can do anything we want. She's at work." But before they got to that house that day, I walked into the bathroom, found my mother's body on the floor. She'd taken over 200 pills, the police told me later, to kill herself. The reason she did that, standing in front of you right now. I never went to her funeral. She was buried in Cooper, Michigan. The day she was buried, I got so drunk, I just wanted that day to go away. I never went to my mother's grave. I left there and went to Texas and lived in a bus. And I knew tonight as I was sharing with you, I was going to get to thank some people that were sitting here, and they're sitting behind me and sitting right over there. Because years later, after I was saved, I was at a church, their church. They gave me and Iris some money and a church van and allowed me to drive back up as we shared our testimonies in their church one weekend and gave me 3 extra days with their van and their money. And I drove back up to Cooper, Michigan and saw my mother's grave and said goodbye to her. I met Iris 12, almost 13 Christmases ago. Ernest had called her. She lived in Atlanta, Georgia then, working with Glenn Shepherd underneath the Prayer and Spiritual Awakening as a Mission Service Corps volunteer. Still is. Now it's some other guy nobody's ever heard of, Henry Blackaby or something. And we was in that office before he was, so. But Ernest called her in Atlanta and said, "Sister, don't bring home any weirdos with you this year. I already got one." And he said, "Sister, this boy I'm bringing home lives in a bus with a bunch of dogs. And it's hard to tell who's the hairiest, him or the dogs. He's got a filthy mouth and he don't even know how to read, sister. So I just wanted to tell you I'm bringing him. Don't buy him any books or anything. We don't want to embarrass him." And I went home with Ernest. I met Iris. She had got me a Christmas present. You know what? I didn't get none of them, nothing. I took my drugs with me to that little farm in Rye, Texas, because I figured I was just going to eat their food and sleep in a nice bed for a couple of nights. And when I'd had all I wanted from them, if they didn't like me, it didn't matter. I'd just get stoned and sit in their living room and watch their Christmas tree blink. What do I care? I was going to take everything I could get from them. When I was through, I'd leave. But when they started passing out gifts from under that tree, they handed me a box. And I didn't expect nothing from anybody. But I opened that box, and inside that box was the Bible on cassette tapes and a cassette player to go with it. Can you imagine my joy? All I got to know is who gave me that, and I'm going to shove it down their throat. And I asked Ernest, who gave me that? And he just smiled, said, my sister got that for you. And I went, all right. I waited for my opportunity in that house because I'd already heard everything you just heard. Ernest had told me at work his sister had been a prostitute, a heroin addict. She'd had abortions. She'd been in prison. She was garbage, and I knew it all. And I'd wait for my opportunity and teach this woman a lesson she'd never forget. I knew how to hurt people. It started as a 13-year-old boy in my mother's home, and by the time I was 21, I'd done all the damage she could stand. I'd teach this woman a lesson she'd never forget. And I waited for my opportunity, and she was alone in the living room later that night, and I sat down beside her on the couch. And I began to tell her every filthy thing her brother had shared with me about her. I'd have her weeping before I was through with her. She'd run to the bedroom, and I'd just go get on my three-wheeler with my dogs and get out of there and forget her. She just needed a good lesson. And I told her every single thing he told me. When I was through, she said, that's true. I'm going to a church this Sunday to share that story. Why don't you come with me? But I ain't kidding you, folks. Just like you see that little coyote when the light bulb goes off over his head, I had the ID of all IDs. I'll go. I'll teach this woman a lesson. This is going to be great. I normally never cut or trim my beard. It stuck out all different lengths, and at 55 miles an hour down the freeway, kind of had its own part. I wore three rubber bands in my hair so it wouldn't get in a knot, but for church, I pulled all three of them out, let it hang everywhere. Put on my favorite T-shirt, had a big hole in it right here. You could see my stomach right through it. I figured I might as well wear something holy. I'm going to church. I took a brush and run through the beard so it was puffed up as big as I could get it to be. I thought about putting a plastic spider or something in there. You know, that'll look good for her. I really figured she'd never take me to no church. She'd just have a heart attack when she saw me. But she pulled in, picked me up in my bus, and started asking me questions about what I'd done that week. And just talked to me. Asked me how I trained them dogs to stay on that motorcycle. And asked me all kinds of questions before I knew it. We was in a church parking lot, coming through two doors in the back. Way smaller than this place, just two sections. And we came through the back door together. I figured everybody in the place must have been some kind of a town with a disease, because they all had asthma. About the second row from the back, this little woman, one of them women, not gray hair, I'm talking blue hair. She is about 99, little bent-up fingers. She probably weighed 70, and she was 99 years old. Wrinkly, blue-headed, weird-looking little woman. Stepped right out in the aisle, right in front of me, and put that little wrinkled hand out and looked up at me, grinning, and said, we're glad to see you today. Thought she must be stoned, man. And I sat in that church and heard that woman share, and it still amazes me. I thought, why is she telling them the truth? What difference does it make? They don't know nothing. Lie to them. It's so simple. You can lie to anybody. There isn't anybody I can't fool. And when she was through, a preacher got up and he said, maybe you're here today and you're a sinner. Well, you know, folks, I didn't have to bow my head and go, I wonder if, sinner. This was a no-brainer, folks. I'd probably fall into the sinner class. I was a liar, a thief, a bully. I couldn't read, but I figured that book they were all holding probably said some have lied, stole, abused their family, done drugs, and fallen short of the glory of God. I had no idea. It just said all had sinned. Thought I was a sinner because I was wicked. I didn't know I was a sinner simply because I was born. I didn't understand the gospel. I thought the book was a bunch of junk. And she gave me her card and said, if you ever want to talk to me, you can call me even late at night. Anytime you want to call me, you can call me Collect. And I got back to the bus, load up, and I went cruising through the park where everybody pointed at me and I could be the center of attention. And I said, forget that lady. She's crazy. But 2 weeks later, when the beer joint closed late one night, and I went there every single night. I was at the beer joint every night. Everybody knew me. Nobody even parked in my section where them two dogs were sitting. That was my parking spot. That bar closed, and I wasn't drunk enough to go to sleep. I wasn't drunk enough to forget my past. There was no present to look at, and there's never going to be a future. I hated seeing my mother's body over and over and over. I'll just walk down to the payphone and call that lady. What difference does it make? Most of you Christians are just sitting up at 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning waiting for somebody to call you collect anyhow, ain't you? Well, I care. It don't cost me nothing. And I called her. We talked a long time. I finally got tired of it. Hung up and went back up to the bus, went to sleep, went to work the next day. A couple weeks later, I called her again. A couple weeks after that, two times. And a week after that, every single night of the week. And by April, on a long-distance phone call with that woman, she said this to me one night. Way after the bar had closed, she said, Blue, what would you do if you were standing in a church at an altar getting married? And I knew I'd never be married. Women are something you use. You don't keep them. She said, what if you met a real lady that really wanted to be your wife? No real lady'd ever go anywhere with me. I was free. I could go anywhere. But I'd never be married. I'd never have a home. I had a bus. She said, pretend you're standing in a church, and I didn't say nothing. And she said, the preacher'd say, Blue, do you take this woman to be your wife? And I just held the phone. I didn't say nothing. She said, you'd be nervous, but you'd say, I do. Then the preacher asked that young woman, do you take Blue here to be your husband? And she'd smile in her white dress and say, I do. But I got this other boyfriend, Tom, and I'm going to marry Blue. But every Friday night after I tuck Blue into bed, I'm going to just slip over to Tom's house and sleep with, you know, it's just a physical thing with me and Tom. I started yelling at her over the phone. I said, you're crazy, lady. You think I'd marry some girl that's going to sleep with some other guy telling me at the altar? That's stupid, lady. And she said, you wouldn't accept her commitment? I said, that ain't a commitment, lady. That is trash. And she said, what do you think God will do with your commitment? And for the first time in my life, folks, I realized it ain't just believing in Jesus. It's a commitment of your life. And a big, ugly, hairy man standing in a parking lot just stood there and said, hey, lady, I don't know how to pray. I don't know how to talk to God. I don't even know how to read. I don't know nothing. For 33 years, lady, I've been living for me, and if God's real, I want to live for him. Amen. And the greatest truth I've ever learned was revealed to me that very moment, folks. You can lie to your mom. You can lie and steal from your biker buddies. You can lie to yourself. But you'll never lie to Jesus. Amen. Jesus Christ, 2,000 years ago, hanging on Calvary, knew I was a thief and a bully, a murderer of his own mother. Only my fingerprints weren't on the pills, so I wasn't arrested for the crime. But hanging on Calvary, Jesus yelled, Dwayne Blue, I love you. I'm dying for you. I met that Jesus in a beer joint parking lot 12 years ago. I joined a local church the very next Sunday. I met my first pastor on a Thursday when I drove into his church parking lot and told him, I just got saved. Sir, I don't know nothing about church, and I don't know nothing about preachers. I always figured you were the laziest men on earth. You only work one day a week. And since today's Thursday and you ain't doing nothing anyway, wherever you go, sir, I'm going. And his eyes bugged right out of his head. He explained me at the hospital all morning. He explained me to the preachers he met for lunch. And that Sunday morning, sitting on the front row, I cried through the whole service. I didn't cry the day I found my mother dead on the floor. I didn't cry the day they buried her. But I cried the day that man explained to me that the big, ugly, hairy boy had died. And there was a little boy now alive. And he could grow in Jesus and become something. Well, you folks, I didn't have to bow my head and say, oh, God, could I just get drunk every other night of the week? The only people I know in town's down there in that beer joint, God. I don't know nobody else. And it was a Baptist church I joined, folks. I sat on the front row. Nobody told that boy it's against the rules. See, this is the smart sections here. Look at that. Two empty rows. I sat there alone, folks. I was only ever afraid of one thing in my life. I've been beat up, and I've beat up a few. I was afraid of one thing, being alone. You can be alone in a 1952 International school bus or the front row. And I didn't want to be alone. But you know what? I knew that place was where I was going to be, and I come to every activity that church had. On Tuesday night, they had something called visitation. Only 6 people came to that. And the preacher's the only one that would take me. He'd have to explain me again on Tuesday night. Nobody else would go anywhere with me. They had Wednesday night prayer service. About 50 of them had come to that. Sunday school on Sunday morning, and I went to that. The first day they put me in the class, there was 8 men. The next Sunday I came back, there was only 1. I'm sure glad the teacher came back. I couldn't read. But I came to everything that church had going. I didn't miss nothing. I just wanted to get involved, folks, in anything Jesus was doing. You know what? 2 weeks after I was saved, a lady I used to see every night of the week in that beer joint named Miss Alice. In her 60s, a good woman. I never saw her drunk. I never saw her drink more than 3 beers in any night. She'd come in that bar after work and drink 3 beers, and most nights every single one of them had been paid for before she even got there. Because all us boys who went in that place every night knew Miss Alice was coming down there on Friday with 5 gallons of spaghetti or 5 gallons of chili or 5 gallons of stew or something, and we'd all eat Miss Alice's home cooking on Friday. Well, Miss Alice came over to my bus 2 weeks after I quit going to that beer joint. She had a pot of soup in one hand and a bottle of liquor in the other, and she knocked on that bus. Said, "Blue, we ain't seen you in a couple of weeks. I thought you might want some food or need some booze. If you don't have any money, we still want you to come down to the bar tonight. We'll even pay for your drinks. We just want to know what happened to you." I told her. I said, "Miss Alice, the man you come to visit, he don't live here anymore. Miss Alice, he died 2 weeks ago right down there in the very parking lot that you're in every night. I was on a phone call with a really weird woman from Georgia. And that old boy died, Miss Alice, and I live here now in his bus with his dogs and ride his motorcycle. I go to a little church down the road where they don't sit by me, park by me, or talk to me, but I ain't never going to be alone again, Miss Alice." Fourth Sunday at my little church, it rained Saturday night, and that old three-wheeler didn't start after a rain. And I didn't make it to Sunday school, Sunday morning, or Sunday night service, and not one person. Preacher, youth director, music man, Sunday school teacher, nobody came by that bus all week long. See, folks, I don't know you sitting here tonight. I know what's out there. I lived out there for 33 years, and they will come after your community. They'll bring the booze and the dope and the garbage right to them. But you? My mother died on a linoleum floor, East Alcott Street, Kalamazoo, Michigan, a 40-year-old woman. She owns a Bible. I got it. It's unsigned, unopened, binding unbroken. My mother never attended church. There's no evidence in my mother's life that she ever had any kind of a commitment to Jesus Christ. My mother is in hell right now. 8 churches live within 2 miles of her home, and never, never did one knock on her door. Your community needs what you have tonight. Our mission? Invite some piece of garbage into your home for a meal. That piece of garbage might be me or Iris.
I think it's obvious that the pastors at that conference, Dr. Dobson, appreciated Duane Blue's story of a wayward past and how he came to the place he's at today, now serving in missions work.
Did that carry you along with it?
It was powerful. It was just great to listen to.
It sure was. Duane is a new creature in Christ now. You know, it's a bit ironic that he was standing there in front of pastors challenging them to evangelize, to reach out to people like himself and his mother so they don't slip through the cracks just because no one cared enough to talk to them or to befriend them, to invite them to a social outing or a church outreach. I heard a pastor the other day say the best way to introduce someone to Christ is to tell your story. And that makes a lot of sense. I agree with it. But there is a step that comes before that. You need to ask them what their story is. You need to show your concern about them, because most people feel as Iris and Duane did, that nobody cares. Nobody would want to know their story, that they have no value, that they have no worth. And once you express that love to another person and get into their life, then they want to know about your story and why you have a smile on your face.
And that concern gives you a platform from which to share your story.
Of course it does. If we keep away from people who are different from ourselves, those who don't smell quite right or look quite right or dress quite right, we could be missing out on a wonderful opportunity to see God do a marvelous work like he did for these two people that we've heard from yesterday and today.
Well, and Jesus' ministry was all about those people that quite fit the religious mold of the Pharisees.
Yeah.
And we don't want to be guilty of what the Pharisees were guilty of, and that is judging from the outside. I can just picture Jesus walking along a street and stopping at the corner to talk to Duane and Iris and just share with them and bring them into his love.
And yet, I have to admit to you, my inclination would not have been to go over and put an arm around them because they would seem hopeless, you know. But Jesus cares about those people just as much as he does you and me who came to know him early.
Mm.
There's a message there for all of us today.
Well, there sure is. And I'm really hoping these testimonies we've heard in the last couple of broadcasts have expanded our thinking and will stimulate more compassion, more care for those around us. We're called to always be sharing the love of Christ with others. And again, perhaps this program will challenge our listeners to do that. Well, today's program was provided by Focus on the Family. Our website is simplyfamily.org, family.org. Thanks to Jan Nations, our executive producer, Jim Adam and Will Kaiser, for taking care of engineering and production, and our producer, John Scott Welch. Your host is psychologist and author, Dr. James Dobson. And I'm John Fuller, inviting you back next time when we'll turn our hearts toward home.